Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
The Snapcast is a production of the Nonprofit Snapshot. Please visit us at nonprofitsnapshot.org to learn more about our consulting work and the ways we can help your organization continue to make the world a better place.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. My guest for today is Robin Rosenberg, psychologist and CEO and founder of Living Their World. Robin, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I'm glad we could do this today.
You
Living Their World uses VR to do what?
We use virtual reality in part as part of our program to address issues of bias and incivility in the workplace and upskill people for respectful engagement.
How do you do that with VR?
We put people in the perspective of someone from a given demographic group or theme, like sexual harassment, and really help you understand the mental toll that it takes, sort of situation after situation after situation, to motivate habit change. In essence, what we do is habit change, to have inclusive behaviors. They should be a habit, you know, respectful behaviors, how to be civil with each other in the workplace, how to be open and curious. And so you have to be motivated to develop new habits.
Yeah.
And we found that virtual reality can really help increase that motivation. And then the rest of our program that's not VR also helps figure out what you should be doing. What are those new habits? And we help you sustain them. So it's an integrated program.
Interesting. Because I'm a geek and because I'm sort of a techno nerd, I have to ask some what may seem like very silly questions. Have you gamified the training experience?
No, okay. We have not intentionally. Because when you gamify it, you're actually many reasons. One is you're not in the game itself. You're thinking strategy. If you know, how do I level up? And that's the wrong perspective. So we don't do that. And also, you know, you don't want to get killed, so to speak.
Right.
That's not a great experience. Interestingly, because of COVID, we had to expand the ways that we can provide the virtual reality experience because people weren't in, it was set up to be in an office. Mm-hmm. And so now we also have it with what's called mobile VR, where you put your smartphone in a mobile VR headset that are very inexpensive.
Yeah.
You can get online, as well as what's called immersive video, sort of like a YouTube 360.
Mm-hmm.
If you're familiar with that. So
yeah,
that's kind of fun that we have these multiple ways people can have the experience from home or in office. And, you know, just these powerful experiences of really understanding more deeply someone else's perspective.
Sure. I have one more question to ask about the technology before we get into the rest of our agenda.
Sure.
But can you give me an example of what that would look like to me as a consumer? Like if I call Live in Their World and I say I want to offer this to my staff or to my board, or if it's just for me, what would I then expect happens? Do you send me the headset? Do I get my own? Do I, you know what? Yeah.
Oh, technically, no. Mm-hmm. We don't send headsets. If you wanted to see it in a VR, you know, formal Oculus headset, you know, you would buy your own headset, or you could see it on your smartphone. And we have recommendations of different mobile VR headsets you can get very cheaply on Amazon or Target or, you know, Walmart. Or you can experience it on your computer without any extra.
Oh.
Information just on an immersive video. So it's really up to you.
Got it.
How you or your board or your team, how you'd want them to experience it. And, you know, if you wanted to purchase extra accessories or not.
So immersive video would then follow and presumably some curriculum that goes along with that.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's we have different tracks and each track has a theme or intersectional demographic group that we're trying to help upskill. Fundamentally, though, the skills of respectful engagement are the same. And so the curriculum, if you will, is general, of how to be a respectful person, none of us is ever going to get it all right. And so we need to learn how to learn and how to engage people respectfully, to tell them when they're wrong, how to respond when they tell us when we're wrong, and how we can intervene as an ally to when we spot something. And there are many ways to intervene, by the way. So it's not all like there's one right way. And so we call what we do civility training, because fundamentally it's about unearned respect that we should just be showing to everyone.
Well, and that I think is a good segue to the next point that you had sent to me, which was to for us to talk about why is inclusion on nonprofit boards important? And I think that has everything to do with belonging and respect, but I don't want to steal your thunder on this. Why is inclusion on nonprofit boards important?
So there's inclusion, and then let's break that apart, because there are many different ways we could be discussing inclusion on boards. So there's inclusion within a board. There's the inclusion between the board and the staff. There's inclusion of, you know, an executive director as you know, part of the board or as a guest of the board. So there are many different facets of inclusion and nonprofit boards. Do you have a particular place we should start to have that discussion?
Well, I'm curious about inclusion between a board and a staff. It kind of surprises me that it shouldn't surprise me, but it does. That's not something we tend to readily think of when nonprofits think of diversity and inclusion. It's either has something to do with their service, providing a service to a population, or with board recruiting, or with staff recruiting. But the relationship between the staff and the board is not something we really take a look at very often, at least not on the Snapcast.
Okay, so let's start there.
Yeah,
and let me make a distinction between diversity and inclusion.
Very good.
So, you know, diversity. There's a lot of different kinds of diversity. There's diversity of thought. There's, you know, racial diversity, gender diversity. You know, there's the catch-all of sort of obvious diversity, if you will, sort of that you can tell from someone's resume photo, for instance, as well as other kinds of more hidden diversity around mental health, neurodiversity, physical diversity that are often harder to tell. Certainly on Zoom, you know, they may be much harder to tell. So diversity in its best sense is about recognizing the ways that certain people have had a harder time simply by virtue of belonging to a certain demographic group of being hired, being sponsored, mentored, promoted, being asked to be on a board, sort of being developed in the talent pipeline, if you will, both from talent acquisition all the way through talent development, simply because of their demographic identity, have not had the same opportunities. And so what diversity is really just making sure you equalize the playing field. And when possible, when candidates are equivalent, you want to go for the diverse candidate for many reasons. One is to rectify a sort of historical wrong.
Right.
But the other is because when you have inclusion, which we'll talk about in a second, you actually welcome the fact that diverse candidates can assume, but there's a tendency to bring different experiences and perspectives, and really being open to learning about those perspectives and utilizing those perspectives and the strengths that they come with helps the organization. So, and we, you know, there's data about when you have diversity with inclusion. So what's inclusion? Okay, so now versus diversity by the numbers, which is just a number, check the box. Inclusion in this context is really appreciating differences in a funny way, that everyone comes with their own experience and the experience of their demographic group almost always, but again, no assumptions, everyone's an individual,
right?
But that homogeneity, while it may be more comfortable, isn't actually great for the organization. And so whether it's a team or a nonprofit or a company or, you know, whatever, that you really want heterogeneity and differences that value, now here we get into the inclusion piece, that you value what each person brings to the table. And you're open to learning from each other and really curious about the differences. It's sort of curiosity is a really curious and open are my two favorite words around inclusion. And then because of what we do, I would also say that a fundamental part of inclusion is respect, because when you're in an inclusive group, you feel valued, that you feel like you're contributing, that your ideas matter. And with that comes amazing things. It comes belonging, it becomes engagement. People do their all for the organization or the company or the team. You know, they go out of their way. And when you don't have this, the flip side is there's a real cost to what we might call exclusion or incivility, disrespect, bias, and discrimination, right? Which is, there's people are less productive. They spend some time really trying to avoid people who have been disrespectful to them. I mean, there's, we can go on and on, but well known in the literature. So inclusion is really important. Inclusion is really a precursor to diversity, to having a diverse organization, because if you go to the trouble of hiring or onboarding board members who are diverse, but you don't have inclusion, why should they stay?
Exactly.
So if they're not feeling valued and not really having a chance to contribute equally, then that's a problem. And then we can talk about equity if you want, but how that fits in, but we don't have to.
Yeah, no, I mean, that may be episode two, perhaps, but you said something about inclusion and belongingness, you know, giving people a sense of purpose or a sense of being able to share and moving the agenda forward as an equal participant. I want to ask a question that's probably way too big for our remaining time, but that is, how do you make that possible? How do you get that to happen with the board that doesn't have that? And I suspect it has something to do with one of the bullet points you sent me is has something to do with openness to new perspectives and new learning. But again, I don't want to steal your thunder. So how do you,
No, no, that's great. So I think there are two ways you can begin the process with a board that may not currently feel inclusive. So, I mean, one is really a needs analysis of, well, why doesn't it feel inclusive? Is it homogeneous and it doesn't feel inclusive? I mean, that, you know, like, so what's the problem here? Right, is that it's not functioning well as it? I would say that that means the board isn't functioning well as a team. And why is that? And it's fine to have disagreements, by the way. I mean, you know, I have experience as an executive coach. And one of the things that I've used to tell people is, while there's nothing wrong with conflict, the word itself can bring up a lot of anxious feelings for people. And so I actually like the word conversation. Because really, when you have disagreements, it's an opportunity to have a conversation and understand each other's positions, which helps a lot, by the way. If I can understand where you're coming from when you disagree with me, like, you're almost always well-intentioned,
right?
We're on, ultimately on the same team. We may just see things differently. And if we both are functioning as a team that has a disagreement in a conversation, we might be able to find a win-win or just win for the organization. Right. We don't have to win. The win is for the team.
Right.
So if you have an organization that a board that doesn't have inclusion, you know, you might want to bring in a consultant to help you figure out why. But one of the things is, where is openness and curiosity? Right. Where isn't it? So obviously, if you're the head of the board, you can be a driving force for that openness and curiosity, right? And you can just set that agenda, if you will, for the team. Because part of it is really having the board discuss this. What's our process, you know, along with what are our goals? Do we, I mean, this gets into a very large conversation, but is, what are our goals and how will we know when we're meeting them along the way? You know, do we have metrics? Because some of these things are just testable hypotheses, if you will. We think this is the way to go. How will we know if we're right? What's our time frame? You know, how do we get data about it? So it's that being open and curious, we have some ideas. Well, how can we see if they're right? When we talk about inclusion and inclusion on a board, the CEO, again, can do a lot to put things on the table and to steer and bring in help as needed. Now, if the CEO is someone who's not open and curious, as a board member, you can still help drive that, sometimes behind the scenes by getting allies of other members of the board, and together, you know, basically outnumbering or sort of being enough of a voice to raise the issue. But taking a step back in terms of diversity on a board, you know, and inclusion on a board, it's what kind of diversity, right? And what does that look like? And what is it that you want? I mean, I can send you a link so you can post it somewhere. There's a website that has great questions for boards struggling with this issue. And I think it has 15 questions to ask yourself about why, you know, what is it you're wanting? So really help you focus in instead of just, well, we're just looking to hire someone, right. You know, put someone on the board who's Black, let's say. That's not great. And that person, if they're not included, why would they stay?
Right. Why would they stay?
Right.
The last thing I wanted to touch on today before we wrap the episode is you wrote this sentence to me, harnessing the desire to do good with ROI. Can you demonstrate ROI against, you know, the desire to do good? How do you do that?
So, yes, do that. Mm-hmm. And I think that boards should be having that conversation. Absolutely. And particularly with the executive directors who ideally know who are closer to the boots on the ground, so to speak.
Yeah.
But whatever the mission is for the organization, there should be some way to collect some data to show how they're doing versus doing nothing,
right?
There are many ways to test hypotheses. Boards have hypotheses about where to devote resources and how it'll make a difference. And that is really best practices, is measuring your success as you go, because you also learn from failures, right? I mean, Mark Zuckerberg spent a fortune in the Newark public school system, right? He had hypotheses about how to help. And unfortunately, those hypotheses didn't get realized, but they wouldn't have known if they weren't measuring.
Right. But from an inclusion point of view, or from a D&I point of view, how do you measure the benefits of the investment in time that it takes to diversify, you know, to I'm totally stumbling over my words here. How do you measure the, it takes a certain investment to go from homogeneity to heterogeneity, right? So it's time. It could be resources. If you hire a consultant, it could be a number of other things, but how do you measure the end results of what it means to make the conscious attempt to diversify your board or your staff or your service population, things like that? How do you bring inclusion into that equation?
That's a great question. I'm going to take the board one first, because they're actually, I think, different answers for the different sort of levels, if you will. On a board, again, it's, well, why are you wanting to have a diverse board? I mean, that's those 15 questions, right? Which is, what is the goal? And so we will know whether we've met it. You know, is the goal ideally, if the organization addresses a group of people who are demographically dissimilar to the board, even if it's social class, right? So it may have been, you know, board members may have grown up poor, but now they're wealthy, and so they're helping people who are financially, you know, underwater, right? So they may say, I've been there, but they haven't been there now in our current economic climate. And so having boots who are closer to the ground, right? Having diverse board members who really more deeply understand current issues is really helpful. So it's, why would you bring on diversity, right? And that will help you understand how you know it's being helpful. So it, you know, is there a disconnect between the mission of the board and what the board looks like?
Right. Right. And if you're really interested in fulfilling your mission, here are the people you really should be asking about it.
Right.
That sort of thing. Yeah.
Right. And where they not just have input, but have a seat at the table, so to speak, and help decide what the table looks like.
Yeah.
You know, what furniture is bought. if you want to go that way, it's right. Not just a seat at the table, but they too get to they get to go to the store and buy the furniture with you.
Exactly. That's an excellent metaphor. I love that. Robin, we've run out of time. Can we make an attempt to Absolutely. Do episode number two at some point? I would really Absolutely. Welcome that.
I would love to. I would love to. These are great questions.
Thank you. If in the meantime, if an audience member wanted to get in touch with you to learn more about Live in Their World or about the other stuff that you do, how would you suggest they do that?
They can email me at Robin, R-O-B-I-N, at liveintheirworld.com. And I'm on LinkedIn. Live in Their World is on LinkedIn. We are on Twitter, although that's not my favorite. Don't try to reach me via Twitter. And our website, you know, you can contact us there as well.
Great. Robin, thanks for taking.
Hey, it was an honor to be here, and thank you so much for such wonderful questions.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.